be a scientific debate, but and so earlier tonight, I've already told you my philosophy, and they said, well, gee, you know, they need to like to have a minute on philosophy of this debate, so to make sure that they're both playing with the same rules. So, Lawrence.
Okay, well, I wanted to say that, in fact, this is a debate, and for some reason I spent a lot of time lately in debates, and I've debated a lot of intelligent design advocates, and I've debated, people have been abducted by aliens. And, but Brian, but this is not really what you think it is. This is, you know, I don't want to disappoint you all, but this is not that kind of debate. We're actually on the same side. And I want to make that clear up front, in a sense. We're scientists, and we like and respect each other, I think. And as scientists, we've worked on similar things over time. And so the debate isn't about, you know, in my opinion, isn't about whether doing string theory is science or not, I don't think. It's a debate about the relative significance of events that have happened and the quality of the results that have come out. And so it's a debate among scientists. And in that sense, therefore, I view it as very different than the kind of debate that I've done in those other contexts. And that's really what I want to make clear.
Thank you. You may have already said in the introduction, we couldn't hear in the back, but it's, you know, I think it's exciting for both of us and gratifying that there is such an interest in these kinds of questions. I mean, I realized that when I got off the plane and I took a cab ride, and the cabbie didn't know at all who I was, and he just turns to me and asks me what I think about string theory. Pull up to red light, and there's couples yelling, string theory's right, string theory's right.
Isn't it incredible?
And that, again, is really the heart of what this is all about. But just to frame things slightly, I think Mike may have already mentioned it, but I mean, the ideas here are huge. I mean, in 1955, Albert Einstein was lying on his deathbed and asked for the pad of paper which he had been scribbling equations in the hope that he'd find this unified theory that would put together gravity and quantum mechanics. I mean, he was so passionately driven that even there at the very last moment, he was still trying to find it, and he didn't. And what's exciting to us in the field is that we may have that unified theory. We don't know, but we may have it in the context of this approach called string theory. And the one thing that I want to say at the outset, we'll come to what string theory is and all that, no doubt, in due course, but I just want to emphasize that string theory fits right into the standard mold of the scientific method. However radical its ideas, it still fits into the mold of people come up with a germ of idea and they kick it around and they develop it and they try to extract predictions and they try to test them. Now, string theory, as we'll discuss, does make predictions. The thing is that they're so far beyond what we can test with today's technology that it's hard to test the theory. So what do we have to do? But I just want to stress one more point. However radical the ideas are, bear in mind that we are not trying to step outside the scientific method, which is something that has been out there in the press and in the media. We will not believe this theory until it's experimentally tested. So if you were to ask me my final point, do I believe in string theory? My answer is no. Do I believe that string theory has incredible promise and is the best approach to unification? Absolutely.
Okay, I think that was a good, I've been working on about 10 times. I've never succeeded in doing that before, so. Okay, I'm gonna guide through a bunch of questions here, and I should have said, and we've reserved time at the end for questions from the audience. So, in the way of an opening statement and to get us rolling, I've asked Brian to describe what is string theory, what's its ambitions, and then we'll let Lawrence have his view on that. If it needs some follow-up, I'll post them. So what is it? What's its ambition?
So there are two main things that you should have in mind. First, the ambition of string theory, as we've mentioned now, is to put together the laws of gravity, general theory of relativity, together with the laws of quantum mechanics into one seamless whole. And the reason for that is there's some real realms in the universe, the Big Bang, the center of black holes, in which both of these pillars of 20th century physics need to be brought to bear
but as they're conventionally formulated, they are mutually contradictory. So we don't know how the universe began, we don't know what happens in the center of a black hole because of this conflict. That's its ambition, to solve that conflict. How does it try to do that? Well, let me just give you a gist of what the theory says. It rewrites the rules of what makes up the fundamental constituents of matter. We all know if you take that piece of wood, making up the table, cut it in half, keep on cutting that piece into ever smaller pieces, you get molecules, you get atoms, atoms have electrons around the nucleus with neutrons and protons, you got quarks inside. That's where the conventional ideas stop. String theory comes along and suggests, and underscore suggests, that there is at least one more layer to the story, that inside those particles there's something else. A little tiny filament, little tiny filament of energy. It looks like a little piece of string. That's why we call it string theory. And these little filaments, these little strings, can vibrate in different patterns. If it vibrates in one way, it would be an electron. If the string vibrates in a different pattern, it would be a quark. The notes, if you will, that the strings can play correspond to the particles of nature. That's the basic idea. Now, it turns out, and this I won't try to answer now, I presume we'll come to it, this little change from the old picture of a dot to the new picture of a filament winds up resolving the conflict between general relativity and quantum mechanics. That's why we're excited about it. We have to go further and see whether it describes other features of the world. That's what we're vigorously pursuing.
Great, that was concise.
Yeah.
Good.
My own ambition.
Yeah, so what's your take on what string theory is and its ambitions?
I have one slide.
This is probably enough, but it's actually got words. The first person says the other, I just had an awesome idea. Suppose all matter and energy is made of tiny vibrating strings. The other one said, okay, what would that imply? First one goes, I don't know. As we'll talk about, there are fascinating reasons, and I've written about them in one of my books, for why people were driven to string theory, interested in string theory, and it has been fascinating to think about. The point that I want to make is that it really hasn't lived up to its promise. In fact, as a Nobel laureate, Frank Wilczek, says, string theory is promising and promising and promising and promising. And it's been around for 37 years, and I know Brian and I talked about it, I was going to say that's a short time in maybe the history of science, and it is, except it hasn't really explained any of the things that it originally we hoped it would explain. It, in fact, has gotten less and less clear as time goes on what the theory even is. It's in some sense more complex and diffuse, and it less and less clear, I think, what the ultimate predictions, if it ever can or will make them, are. I think part of the reason is something that Brian alluded to in a way, that one of the things we want to celebrate here tonight, and I really do want to celebrate, is that, you know, particle physics is a real field. It's not just philosophy. It really involves amazing discoveries, and we've learned a tremendous amount in the last 40 years. I don't think people even appreciate how incredible the change in our understanding of the fundamental structure of the universe has been in the last 40 years. And we should celebrate that. But that has come from this remarkable interplay of experiment and theory working closely together. And it's not just people inventing things in offices and chuckling and drinking beer. It really is that interplay has been very, very important. And that interplay has been missing in string theory. Now, that doesn't mean it's wrong. But I think it means that it's worrisome, because most ideas in physics are wrong. That's what makes it hard. And it's not too surprising to have really great ideas that don't work out. And it's not at all clear that in spite of and we'll probably get to some of the interesting reasons why people think about string theory, and Brian's alluded to one, but it's not at all clear that it really has anything to do with nature. And in fact, I'd say after 37 years, it's less and less clear that it has anything to do with nature.
Let me, the next question, we've segued into it rather nicely. And I want to sharpen the issue that Lawrence raised here about, you know, where's the beef, what has it done? And I'm going to give you each a chance to sharpen it. So I'm going to ask Brian's next question. If Lawrence needs a little extra time, I'll give him his next question. Brian's next question are, what are the triumphs? So Lawrence has said, you know, 37 years, haven't done anything. So what do you view as the triumphs? And then you'll come back and what are the failures? Because
I'll talk about the
theories do more.
Yeah.
And that's not a unique feature. But there are sniffers along the way. We see signs. Yeah. And so what do you, try to be as specific as possible here in terms of, so why is it, what are the signs that you see, and why is it that there are a large number of people involved in this activity? What are the successes? And try to be very specific.
Number one, string theory puts together general relativity and quantum mechanics into a mathematically consistent framework for the first time in the history of physics. Number two, this framework that unifies the big and the small winds up embracing almost all of the most pivotal ideas in the history of particle physics in the most natural way. It could have been that this theory puts together the big and the small, but you look at it and it manifestly has no relation to anything that came before. Instead, this theory embraces the ideas that those of you who are familiar with these things in particle physics will know about. Gauge symmetry, the powerful approach to describing the particles of matter. The theory naturally organizes the particles into the families, the categories that experimenters have found throughout the years. It naturally has a way to give particles mass. The so-called Higgs mechanism finds a natural home within string theory. The way in which we can protect certain things, like making protons stable so the world doesn't disappear, has a natural incarnation within string theory. So this way of embracing the past and looking to the future at the same time, to me, is the most compelling reason for believing in the theory. Number three, the theory has given us insight into the nature of black holes. In the early 1970s, Stephen Hawking was able to finesse some of the difficulties in putting gravity and quantum mechanics together to predict that black holes have something called entropy. It's an idea that no doubt many of you are familiar with. They embody a certain kind of disorder. But he was unable to pinpoint microscopically where that disorder resided. String theory comes along, studies black holes, is able to pinpoint the origin of this entropy and calculates a number for the amount of entropy, and it exactly agrees with what Hawking found in the 1970s. These are the reasons why many of us feel that this theory is going in the right direction. I'll finish by noting why is it so difficult to test this theory? You know, Lawrence was alluding to that fact. Briefly, the strings we envision are pretty damn small. How would you test it? Naturally, you'd sort of make a powerful microscope and you'd look down and you'd say, there it is, the string. And we can't do that. We can't come anywhere near doing that because in the conventional approach to this theory, the strings, and perhaps we'll come back to this, are about a billion times smaller than the distances we can probe with even our most powerful accelerators. That makes it hard to test the theory. The theory gives rise to a notion of extra dimensions that maybe we'll come to, but these extra dimensions are so small that we can't probe them. If we had a machine that was sufficiently powerful to probe these tiny distances, we wouldn't be having this debate. Either the theory would have shown the extra dimensions, the experiments would have shown the extra dimensions, or they wouldn't. So this is the issue.
So Brian has pointed to successes. Do you want to point to some failures?
That would take too long,
successes?
I think.
No, I just want to make one thing clear. I have in my back pocket yellow cards and red cards. Those of you who are not familiar with soccer,
yeah.
Two yellow cards equals a red card. So what about the failures?
Let me put it in context. I think Brian was being a little disingenuous. String theory doesn't predict anything about the number of families that there are, doesn't say why there's an electron, doesn't say why there are three families, doesn't say why the electron mass is so light, all of the key part questions that we don't understand. It doesn't say why there's matter and not antimatter, it doesn't answer any of those questions. It's all plausible within the context of string theory, but it doesn't by any means even predict that the electron exists. It's a possibility. In fact, in new versions of string theory, which we'll, some people in string theory will talk about, are promoting, anything is possible. Literally anything is possible. And that we'll come to that question of whether that's science. But I think the great thing about string theory is that every time it has a failure, it's proclaimed to be a success. And it's important to realize that string theory predicts the world has at least 10 dimensions. Why? Because not because of anything fundamental we measure about the world or something that drives us in that direction. It predicts that because a theory doesn't make sense unless there's 10 dimensions.
So Lawrence, do you have some evidence that there aren't 10 dimensions?
No, but I think it's important. It's an important difference. But it doesn't explain why the world, I mean, you look fairly three-dimensional, sometimes two-dimensional, we don't experience them. One of the things you'd hope a theory that would describe the world would naturally explain why we happen to not see those extra dimensions. That's a real problem in string theory, it always has been. And it certainly doesn't naturally come out. It doesn't say why you can't have eight dimensions getting wrapped up in just a two-dimensional universe left over. That's, something that string theorists themselves have recognized as an issue. One would also have to say that some of the things that are proclaimed successes are, by the way, you didn't mention, my mind, one of the most interesting things about string theory is that there's a very interesting symmetry of nature called supersymmetry, which a lot of us think may really exist, even if strings don't. And we're looking, going to look for that in the next generation of accelerators. In actual fact, to be fair, the first realization that might be an interesting symmetry of nature came from the very early mathematical formulation of string theory back in the days when we didn't know if it had anything to do with gravity. And so I think that's one of the interesting things that, in some sense, has come out of string theory, the realization that there could be this interesting symmetry of nature. So I want to point, that's a success that I think is important. But hold on.
Okay.
But let me just say the black hole thing is part of what I view as one of the big failures. In a way, string theory is purported to be a great unification of gravity and quantum mechanics. But there are two questions that I, even as a graduate student, were pressing questions that I want to know. When black holes evaporate, if they evaporate like Stephen Hawking said they do, what happens to the information in black holes? Now, string theory says something about black holes, but not black holes in four dimensions. Not regular kind of evaporating black holes, very special kinds of black holes in higher dimensions. And we don't know if, in fact, when you make the extrapolation to four dimensions, any of that will carry on. It is true that there's an interesting calculation, a number in five dimensions that would agree with what you'd get from Stephen Hawking, but it doesn't tell me anything about how black holes evaporate or how the information loss paradox is overcome. And the other thing, which we'll get to, the one thing you think that a theory of quantum gravity should tell us about is the energy of empty space. And that's been one of the greatest discoveries, most remarkable discoveries made in cosmology in the last 20 years, and string theory failed miserably to predict it, to understand it, and to explain it, except in a way which I'm not sure Brian or I would find palatable. Maybe you do. We'll talk about it. But so those are some of what I would say are concerns.
Let me ask Brian a hard question here, and it'll segue into this.